Welcome back for the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. Discuss two things here in this last 25 minutes. First of all, Pastor David Runyon Bareford will be with us for the first 15 or so. We're going to talk about the new advertising campaign that was launched and is still appearing on television in various markets and various networks, but had a bit of a rocky beginning here in the last couple of days. This new advertising campaign launched by the United Church of Christ. And then, after we conclude our conversation on that with Pastor David Runyon Bareford, we will hear from this week. We did meet the press earlier this week and talked about the religious roundtable they had. There was another religious roundtable that was held by George Stephanopoulos on Sunday morning on his program this week. And what is of interest to me, and I think of to you as well, were the comments, some comments made by Tony Campolo, a very prominent evangelical, but he is viewed largely as kind of leaning to the left. We'll hear what he had to say. And I've got some thoughts on that to kind of put a bow on this week's Issues, Etc., to round off today's program. Pastor David Runyon Bareford is a regular guest here, and he's executive director of a UCC renewal group called Biblical Witness Fellowship. Pastor Bareford, welcome back.
It's great to be back with you, Todd, especially at this Advent season.
Before we talk about this advertising campaign of the United Church of Christ, for those who haven't seen it or heard it, let's listen to the ad before we talk about it.
No. Step aside, please.
Now here we have some bouncers who are turning people away from a
no
church
way.
Door.
Not you. I don't think so. No.
The tagline says, Jesus didn't refuse people, neither do we.
The United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here.
Pastor Bareford, what's the big deal about this ad?
We're not real sure what the big deal is about the ad. We think that it certainly is a misfire, in part because the United Church of Christ is calling it an identity campaign, and we are founded as a denomination on the principle that all may be one. That is, that we were founded in 1957 to bring Christian churches into a unity around the common commitment to Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord. And what this ad communicates by these bouncers saying to certain people you can't come in is the implication that other churches don't accept people. And, of course, the controversial part of it is that one of those people in that ad are two men holding hands, and that other churches reject people like that and don't welcome them into their services, and that the United Church of Christ is somehow very different than other churches in that regard. In the reality, the broad spectrum of Christian churches, especially our larger seeker-sensitive Christian churches, that are transformational, not affirmational, that is, that invite people to be transformed by the love and power of Jesus Christ, are far more welcoming and far more open and far more communicative of God's grace in many instances than we are. So it's sort of an irony to put this forward and put that out there in the face of other churches.
Now, I watched the webcast that was conducted. It's on the website for the United Church of Christ. The presiding minister of the United Church of Christ and several people who were involved at various levels in this ad campaign. We're talking about a $30 million ad campaign, and the initial rollout's about $1.7 million for these television ads throughout the major markets of the United States. And the rationale here was people don't know what the UCC is. We have poor name recognition. And so what we want to do is reach those people who don't know who we are, and especially those people who have been disaffected by other churches. How do you react to this?
Well, first of all, the ad isn't going to do that, because when you do see the ad, the only thing you come away from is you've seen a church with two big scary guys standing in front of it telling you you can't come in. And so the irony is that to the average watcher, unless you've watched it six or seven times and kind of get the subtlety of it, you're going to get the impression that the UCC has big scary people out front telling you not to come in. The second thing is that, of course, this really is only going to identify the UCC as, once again, a controversial church, a church that has a controversial perspective. And really, the reality is, of course, that when you actually show up at a UCC church, it's either going to be a very small congregation that's aging and not really well equipped to bring in new seekers, or it's going to be a church in which people who really have a powerful faith in Jesus Christ and believe that he is Lord and want to evangelize and want to see transformational reality happen are not going to be particularly welcome.
The term that is often used for the United Church of Christ, especially at the time of its formation and shortly after when it still was a very, very... I remember studying the seminary. Now, this was a couple decades ago and being told this is the biggest, one of the biggest church bodies in the United States. Now, it's small to medium-sized, 106,000 congregations, about 1.3 million members all said. But the term was big umbrella. Is that a fair term for the UCC?
Well, now, of course, we are almost inverted. The irony is that our history has turned us around 180 degrees, and the UCC is rapidly becoming sort of the fundamentalists of the left. That is, that they're seeing themselves sort of on a defensive and isolated from other churches in their community. Often, if you have a crusade or a cooperative evangelistic outreach or a Promise Keepers kind of an event or something like that in a city, they will pride themselves on being the only church not participating, the only church not engaged with other evangelical churches in an ecumenical sense. And so, ironically, they need this identity campaign because they have lost their original identity, which, of course, was their birthright in Jesus Christ.
Now, what might you find, you mentioned what you might find if you go to United Church of Christ congregation someplace, what you might initially encounter. Could you find, let's say, the very basic tenets of the Christian faith, could you find them affirmed at some congregations and denied at yet others under the same banner of the United Church of Christ?
Sure. UCC did a recent study, and in their recent study they discovered that 27% of their membership in their churches believed in the virgin birth, believed in the atonement of Jesus Christ through his crucifixion, the power of his resurrection, believed that the Bible was true, believed that marriage was between one man and one woman. So taking that statistic and extending it out, you could anticipate that if you walked into about 27% of the 6,000 congregations, you will find the gospel being preached, the basic tenets of the faith being believed and proclaimed. And I think that's pretty accurate. I think as you move around the country, you can find there's a lot of really strong, excellent congregations. And then on the other hand, you'll find congregations that believe that Jesus is only one possible spiritual path to enlightenment and would believe that almost any sexual practice that was nonviolent would be acceptable in the sight of God. And you would find a real, I think... contrast between different congregations as you walked into them, and I think that makes an identity campaign difficult as well.
Two quick final questions. Do you think that the United Church of Christ is attempting subtly to target homosexuals as a niche for their church in these ads?
Oh, I think they're very open about that. They're extremely open about not just in the ads, but in their emphasis in their new church starts, in the kind of ways in which they're naming some of they're renaming some of their congregations, and in the way they communicate within the denomination to the rest of us who are participating in the denominational life, they're very clear that this is this whole open and affirming direction they think will bring them, a group of people that practice this lifestyle that will come in and the irony is, of course, it's also causing an exodus of a whole other group of people from the church. So,
and a final question here, David. What happened then with this ad and NBC and CBS?
we're really scratching our heads on that one. Why would networks that are generally perceived by the public to be slightly leaning to the liberal side of center and have all kinds of pro-homosexual programming themselves, why would they turn down this ad? And, then the irony, of course, is the only major network that is going to air it is Fox. So what's up with that? I have thought about that all day in anticipation, and I have a perspective. I think that the secular media in this country wants Christians to be Christians. They want people who claim to have conservative moral values to have those conservative moral values. And I think that underlies the difference in the way they treat different subjects. You know, they treated Bush's personal faith differently than they treated Kerry's. They treat Limbaugh's legal and moral dilemma differently than they would treat that of Don Imus. You know, they treat the fall of an evangelical pastor more differently than they would some other kind of person who is involved in an ethical problem. And I think that they're saying to the UCC is, look, the Christian church is supposed to support what the Christian church teaches, and you are proposing an ad that takes that and turns that around, and it's going to cause a lot of misunderstanding. We want you to be, if you're going to be a Christian, be a Christian.
That's an interesting take on it. I'm going to have to give that some more thought. Pastor David Runyon Bareford is executive director of a UCC renewal group called Biblical Witness Fellowship. Thank you for being our guest.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
BiblicalWitness.org is the website for Biblical Witness Fellowship, and their phone number, 1-800-494-9172, 1-800-494-9172. For the remaining minutes of the program, we go up until 5:30 here now that December has begun. Earlier this week, we brought you some stuff from Tim Russert and Meet the Press. Well, there was something that happened the same Sunday morning, another religious roundtable. We won't be able to bring you as much of it. George Stephanopoulos, ABC's This Week, also had a roundtable. One of the participants was Tony Campolo. Now, I want to let you listen to what he had to say, just one of his comments. And it brings us back around to something that happened earlier this week on Issues, Etc. When we were talking about the United Church of Christ ad campaign, we had a caller who called in and said, look, Jesus didn't condemn this or that. Therefore, how can we condemn it? Here's Tony Campolo.
When you say these are the religious issues, abortion and homosexuality, the Republicans win because they're strong on those issues. On the other hand, Jesus never mentions homosexuality. Paul does, Jesus doesn't. But what Jesus does do is say that the one condition for judgment on Judgment Day, as you know, is in the 25th chapter of Matthew. How do we respond to the poor?
All right, this is Tony Campolo. He's famous as an evangelical who started to stray left, and believe me, we talked with Ronald Nash recently, and you say Tony Campolo, he had about as violent a reaction to Tony Campolo as he did to Bill Clinton, okay? He's considered kind of a betrayer of evangelicals. He's also probably typical of the left, the religious left, in this respect. Now, what do you do with this? What do you do when someone says, well, Jesus never condemned homosexuality? And the only thing Jesus really does kind of push upon us is, how do you treat those who are less fortunate than you, or love your neighbor as yourself? Now, we had a caller on Tuesday who raised essentially the same question. Jesus never condemned these things. It doesn't only have to be homosexuality. It could be anything that Jesus didn't explicitly condemn. Now, there are several ways to respond to this. First of all, let's take up the homosexuality thing in particular. Is it true that Jesus never condemned homosexuality? He certainly affirms marriage between a man and a woman. But is it true that he never condemned homosexuality? Well, I guess that depends on where you find Jesus in the Bible. Is it Jesus who speaks through the Apostle Paul, when Paul explicitly, even coins a word, explicitly calls homosexuality among those things that are sinful? Is it Jesus speaking through Paul? Do you find Jesus speaking in Paul's epistles, or do you think it's just Paul? Now, Tony Campolo is very happy to contrast, to divorce Paul from Jesus. I don't think that's something that a sound view of the New Testament can allow us to do. Paul is an apostle at the beginning of every one of his epistles, claims for himself not just apostolic authority, I'm just someone who's kind of following after Jesus and then making it up as I go along. No, he claims to speak for the Lord himself with apostolic authority. So you can't divorce Jesus from his apostles, in particular here, from Paul. It's just it's a clever move, and it tricks a lot of people, but it can't be done, not by Paul's standards. But more importantly, can you divorce Jesus from his father? Or to put it more accurately, can you divorce Jesus, the fact that he doesn't mention homosexuality, from the Old Testament, where God clearly does condemn homosexuality in very explicit terms? You know, you really can't do that either. And it comes back to that question of, Where do you think you find Jesus in Scripture? Is he only in the four Gospels, or is he not only speaking through Paul in the Apostles' writings, but also is he speaking at Sinai? Is it Jesus who speaks as Moses stands there in amidst the fire and the glory and the lightning of Sinai, where the law is given to Moses that condemns homosexuality? Or is it some other god? Some passé god, some old-fashioned, more bigoted god of the Old Testament. You can't divorce Jesus from the Old Testament, which is another way of saying you can't divorce Jesus from the full God, Godhead, God the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. All three persons of the Trinity are there at Sinai. So in answer to the question, does Jesus condemn homosexuality? In the Gospels, no. But from Sinai, yes, he does. And in the writings of his apostles, Paul in particular, yes, he does. That's one response that you can give. And I suggest you kind of commit that one to memory the next time someone says, well, Jesus never explicitly condemned this or that. There's another thing at work here, and that is Tony Campolo seems pretty comfortable with the idea of divorcing the second table of the law from the first table of the law. Often we hear Jesus quoted, love your neighbor as yourself. Kind of the golden rule. That's all Jesus required people to do. The only thing he condemned is things that would fall under the category of not loving your neighbor as yourself or not doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, again, another clever trick, but it doesn't work because the same Jesus who said love your neighbor as yourself says that in the very context of what is the law? What does God mean when he speaks his law? Jesus says before he says love your neighbor as yourself, love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and spirit, and love your neighbor as yourself. What God is he referring to? He's referring to the God who said in the Old Testament that homosexuality, among all the other things, is a sin. Is Jesus recommending that we lay aside the Old Testament condemnations of sin in favor of this more generalized kind of all-affirming, love your neighbor as yourself, just don't hurt anybody, it's okay what you do, no matter as long as it doesn't explicitly hurt someone? By no means. It's a good example there of simply taking Jesus' words out of context to try and play Jesus off against Scripture. But what about this, it doesn't hurt anybody? That was another thing that the caller had mentioned, and this is kind of implicit in the arguments of Tony Campolo. It's okay as long as you're not hurting someone. And I actually fell into this trap. If you were listening to the program earlier this week when we had the caller who said, look, cross-dressing, these other things, they don't hurt anybody. Well, what about child molestation? Well, that hurts somebody, so that breaks, and I fell into the trap. On further reflection, I thought to myself, first of all, is it true that homosexual behavior doesn't hurt anybody? I don't think you can make that case. By definition, homosexual behavior involves more than one person. So at least the potential to harm your neighbor exists. But if I engage in a sin, let's just posit for a moment that homosexuality is a sin. If I engage in a sin with someone else, let's say heterosexual adultery, am I only hurting myself? No. Anyone who is even passingly familiar with a real case of heterosexual adultery realizes that when that bomb drops, lots of people get hurt. Both people involved in the adultery they may not say they're being hurt, but they are. And then children and family and spouses and if it happens within the context of a church, a whole community of believers are hurt. It's just not true that homosexuality doesn't hurt anybody else. But let's say for the sake of argument that it doesn't. Let's just concede that for a moment. Did Jesus only condemn things that hurt other people? Well, if that's true, why would he condemn, say, if you even look at a woman so as to lust after her in your heart, you have committed adultery with her? Not you've committed adultery in your heart, you've committed adultery with her. And Jesus says it is tantamount to adultery, real live, getting your body involved, adultery. And he says it makes you just as guilty before God. He condemns it. If Jesus didn't condemn something that didn't hurt anybody else, he wouldn't have condemned lust in the heart, just thoughts and desires that someone has in their heart. But he does. See, Jesus condemns sins that may, by our human definition, not hurt anybody else but ourselves. Lust, greed, envy, all of these things, even as they occur in our hearts as impulses, as desires, as vices of thoughts, are condemned by Jesus as sin. Look, here's the big myth about Jesus, and that is that he came and he toned the law down so that people could keep it. This is a popular teaching even among Christians. The God of the Old Testament, his father, was pretty hard nut to crack. But Jesus came to kind of tone it down and make it all much easier. Don't tone down the law. Jesus didn't do it. But there's a more important reason even than that than for us not to tone down the law. More important than even that Jesus didn't do it. It was not a toned down law that Jesus kept for us in his perfect obedience. It was the perfect and demanding will of God the Father against sinners that Jesus kept for us in his perfect sinless life. He didn't keep a toned down law. He kept the law in its fullness all the way to the cross and to his death. And then finally, very quickly, this whole notion of Jesus' love as affirming, well, Pastor Bereford said it, the love of Jesus is not intended to affirm us. It's intended to forgive us. And only sinners get forgiven. A sinner who comes looking for affirmation from Jesus will not get affirmation. A sinner who comes looking for forgiveness will get forgiveness from Jesus. Now, when you go to church this weekend, invite your fellow parishioners to tune in to Issues Etc. next week. Sunday night at 10 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis, we're going to be talking with Dr. Stephen Hine about original sin. Man is born, conceived, and born in sin, lost and condemned before God. Also, next week on the program, we'll review the movie Kinsey with Dr. Judith Reisman, and we'll also discuss Eastern Orthodoxy with Dr. John Brenner. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will join us to answer the question, after Roe, what? If Roe gets overturned, then should abortion become a criminal pursuit for both mother and doctor? We'll answer that question. And should we let Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons into our houses in light of John 2, verse 10? Look it up. Ron Rhodes will be our guest to answer that question. And that's all next week on Issues Etc. So when you're in church and you run across the person that you sit next to or that you park next to or that maybe the person you very seldom see, they ask you what you've been doing lately, you tell them, I've been listening to Issues Etc. And you should do the same. It's good stuff. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thank you for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.